What's up, guys? Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of The Tomas Show. Today, my guest is Sam Roach, a longtime Frisco resident, a historian, and a real estate broker of more than 40 years. Sam has served in a variety of different capacities for the city and of Frisco and Frisco ISD and Frisco Economic Development Corporation. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode, because if anybody appreciates the city that Frisco used to be versus where it's now, that's definitely Mr. Sam. So let me know what you think. Cheers.
This is the Tomas Show, your source for personal and professional development.
Sam Roach is, I feel like a godfather in here in Frisco. He will never give himself credit that he is, but I genuinely believe that he was one of the most instrumental people that really helped to get Frisco where Frisco is today. So I just want to say thank you so much for coming.
Well, I don't think I deserve all that, but I tried a little bit along the way to help things along a little bit. Some days I think I did maybe too much.
Well, the little bit turns into too much, and then too much turns into impact. And I am one of those people in the community that feels like I have been impacted truly by what you've done. As a young professional, as an immigrant, as a person that is building life in the new country, I'm about to get married. It's really, and I mean it. I'm not saying just to, just to give you a compliment, just for the sake of it, but it's truly inspirational what you have done here in Frisco. Your family, it is my understanding, has been here since the late 1800s.
Well, they've been here, yes, I guess they have, if you go back before the city of Frisco was founded in 1902.
Yes. Yes.
Because I'm my great-grandmother and my grandmother was born in the, or my grandmother was born in the 1880s, just down here, right east of where we're sitting, in what was called the Lebanon community.
Yes.
But, and then my great-grandfather came down and built the first house in Frisco, 1902. So, yeah, well, the family's got some pretty deep roots here.
Pretty deep roots. And that's, I've talked to so many people here in this city. I've only been here, 2 years now, a little over 2 years. It feels like it has been five. But I'm talking to a gentleman that their family roots, it's been over a century since you guys really, got here. And I feel like it always, I look at my family and, my dad was in military and his dad was a cop. Great grandpa was in the war. It always starts somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you set the foundation, for the future generation. And I feel like you guys truly did that. You truly, paved the way, for this city, for this community today that we have today, that many, many families are blessed to live in. And frankly, I'll be just very transparent with you. I think many people don't understand how blessed they are to be here, because it's an amazing, amazing community.
Well, it really is. It's always been a nice little friendly community. Even when I grew up in the 40s here, it was 600-700 people and just a nice small community. We didn't even have a traffic signal. And finally, they put in a traffic signal in Main and 4th. And nobody paid any attention to it, so they took it out and did away with it. Then we didn't have another traffic signal for several years. But that area of town was sort of where people migrated to. The Kurtzinger drugstore was on the south side of Maine, and the Kurtzingers were my maternal grandparents and ran that drugstore for, I guess my uncle sold it in 67. But that was sort of the community center where everybody congregated, and it was just a neat town. Wasn't even a city then.
Exactly. I feel like it was just the beginning of something special. Did you really feel like at the beginning? Because I know I've seen a lot of, you know, articles. I've read a lot about you and what Bob Warren have done for this community. But have you had this feeling inside of you when you guys were getting started that this, what this community, I mean, we're at the star right now. Did you ever feel like this is coming? What was your, what did you believe? What was your vision back then?
Back then, I had no clue as to what was coming down the pipe. I knew Frisco would grow. There was no question. Mm-hmm. Because Preston Road went up through Frisco. And being in the real estate business, I've had the opportunity to travel to several cities and talk to people about real estate. And they always ask you, well, where are you from? Well, I'm from Frisco, Texas. Well, where's that? And, well, it's on Preston Road.
Yes.
Oh, well, I know where Preston Road is. And you'd be surprised. People all around the country in the real estate know Preston Road. And then it wasn't hard to figure out after the toll road started headed this way that, you know, someday it would go through Frisco. Got here a lot quicker than I anticipated. But with Preston Road and the toll road, you know, we were off to the races, really.
You've graduated Frisco High School as a valedictorian. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly.
That's correct. Valedictorian.
Valedictorian. Yeah. Can you tell me, so obviously from a foreigner's perspective, I'm not really truly aware what that means. Who is a valedictorian? Can you tell a little bit more about
that's
that?
That's the number one grade-wise in the class. But that's no great accomplishment because we had 17 in the class. Okay. Most classes today are hundreds of people.
Yes.
Now that would be something today to be a valedictorian in a huge class.
I see. Okay. So it's ultimately some type of a word or an accomplishment.
It's a grading system.
Grading system.
Your number
okay.
one grade wise.
Okay. Gotcha. Interesting. I've never heard that term before in my 12 years here. So I'm just very curious. So after your high school graduation, UNT for 2 years and then engineering degree from UT Austin.
That's correct.
What's very interesting to me is how did you blend the engineering degree with your ultimately expertise and what you've made your career on real estate? What was that transition like? Why did you select engineering and how did you transition to be this, you know, real estate businessman?
I would like to know how I selected engineering, but I selected it when I was probably in the eighth grade or ninth grade, and I set my goal to get a mechanical engineering degree, and I really don't know why, because there were no engineers in my family, but that was always my goal to get an engineering degree, and I really intended... Or my overall plan was to get the degree, work 5 years in industry, and then quit and go back to the farm and help my parents with the farming. But the end of 5 years is 1963, and we just had, I guess we had one child and had another one maybe on the way at that point, and farming wasn't the most profitable thing around, so I think I better review my thought process here and stay with engineering a little bit longer until things improve. Well, I did that, and I stayed longer than I intended to, but I stayed in engineering for 19 years. But the thing that two things made me resign from LTV. One, it was getting, as I was progressing in the organization, it was getting more and more political. And I didn't like that end of things. I liked the engineering that I was doing, working on simulators, training equipment for the military. And I really liked that. But also at the same time, I was watching my two kids grow up. And they were both in high school.
Yes.
And I finally realized that I was missing a lot of their activities that they were involved in school. And I realized if I didn't, you know, quit engineering and find something locally, that I'd be missing out a lot of their growth period, a lot of their activities, and, you know, that one of these days they'd be gone.
Yes.
So that was a really driving force that caused me to leave the engineering field.
You know, you said something that is very admirable, and that's the balance that you have to find as a parent, which I'm an aspiring parent. I'm not there yet, but me and my fiance obviously, you know, think of having a family. And I think as I observe and study people and really look at what different business people and just professionals, period, can accomplish and how much travel could be involved in somebody's job, I think that balance between raising children and being in their life is so critical. You know, me personally, you know, I left my home when I was 16, which is probably something very rare, but you know, I was living my dream in basketball, and my parents empowered me to live that dream. But I've always felt that I took away some of their parental experience. It's probably several years before I went to college. So I don't have any regrets, because I know I have a goal of them to really, you know, move here either for good or interim basis. And I can just basically be a provider for them, because they've done all the work that they had to already, and they can just retire. That's my goal. And then I feel like it will be all worth it. But I'm saying this is because, you know, as we think about, you know, having kids, that balance will be that much more important, because I want my family to be in the life of their grandkids. You know, Ashley's family is around. I love them. However, it's all about the parents, grandparents being around, because ultimately that's the foundation that you can set for a young child as they grow and aspire to be somebody that they want to be.
That's correct.
So,
all kids need two parents, you know, to help along the way.
And you are, you know, you are very, speaking of parents and kids, you're very giving also. You know, we developed a relationship because of Boys and Girls Clubs of Collin County. I have a privilege to serve on the board. So just want to say thank you for all you do, because that doesn't go unnoticed. I know that the kids appreciate that. And my sincere gratitude for that.
Well, thank you for taking the responsibility and getting involved with things like the Boys and Girls Club. That's great, because you get involved in that and then you see another need somewhere. And first thing you know, you're involved in several things.
I genuinely believe that I'm facing kind of the similar moment that you've had by being a professional in your engineering field, and you were a parent, but I'm experiencing something different. And that's, you know, understanding that I also want to, you know, I'm having this, I have a great job, I'm on this journey, and it's my responsibility, as I am fortunate to work where I work, to live where I live, to give back. So the sooner we realize, as I think, young people, to give back when we get somewhere, it's not like I'm not somewhere, but a lot of people help me to get where I am, right? So if I can share that message with those kids that I, you know, I was able to come here at an early age and build a life, that's the same, what you were able to do is say, you know what? It's about those kids. You know, it's about the kids. It's about impacting others. It's about giving back. So I feel like because of that, I genuinely believe we were able to build that relationship. And that's why you're here. You know, I'm very thankful that you came to the show today. So, I want to transition to something. So real estate, obviously has been your, you know, again, kind of the foundation of your career after that transition. You served four terms on the Frisco ISD Board of Trustees, served for 13 years on the board for Collin College, and 15.
I think is actually 22 years.
22 years? Okay, maybe I have wrong data that was provided. I have some sources online, but it's been obviously a lot of years and impact in the community development and economic development in this area. What has been the biggest, you think, where did you have the most fun? Like, what was so fulfilling? What made you the most happy out of all these different endeavors that you've been a part of here in the community?
Are you talking about boards that I've served on?
Let's start with your community involvement first, and then we can transition to your career. Obviously, but let's start with your board's service, your community involvement. You know, what made you do it? Why was it, what type of an impact did you see that it generates?
I guess, you know, I left engineering in 1977 and, a few years before that, I wound up on a rural water board.
Yes.
We had a little rural water system here around Frisco, and I wound up as president of that board.
Mm-hmm.
And little did I know at the time, but the president made most of the decisions, did a lot of the work. It was a non-paying thing.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't found a volunteer thing yet that pays, but
yes,
I'm still looking. But, I was involved in that for many, many years, and probably close to 20 years. And I enjoyed doing that. It helped a lot of people. And I was on the rural water system where I live,
mm-hmm.
north of town.
Yes.
And so anyway, we enjoyed that, and it helped a lot of people. But then along the way, somebody urged me to run for school board. So I ran for the school board and wound up getting elected to that after I guess I'd run twice before.
Yes.
And wasn't successful. But anyway, then I spent 12 years on that board.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was beneficial to, you know, the kids, at least I hoped it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I enjoyed the majority of that time. And then a year or two after I got off the ISD board, then I got a call from the president of Collin Community College.
Yes.
And they had a vacancy, which they needed to fill. And the president asked me if I'd be willing to fill that slot. And I was happy to do that and kind of thrilled to do that, you know, be asked to be on a college board.
Yeah.
And then I served there 22 or 23 years. I lose track.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I was on a lot of other various things along the way, like United Way.
Yes.
Involved in that and involved in some other things.
Frisco Chamber, right?
The Chamber. I was involved in the Chamber. And
Heritage Association, I feel like there was as well.
Yeah, that was a little later on, but it just seemed like that I gravitated toward education.
Yeah.
Something involving education.
Mm-hmm.
So there's where I spent over 35 years. Essentially volunteering and working with education.
How critical, so you're touching something very, very spot on that I wanted to ask you. I'm very vocal about community involvement and why young people should early dive into their communities and support them and volunteer. You know, it's easier said than done to get on the board or, you know, a committee of some sort. But I want to ask you a question. How critical for a young professional's growth is philanthropy, is community involvement? Why should we encourage our young, you know, kids, grandkids, everybody, the next generation? Why should they do that in your belief?
Well, there's a lot of folks out there in the community and in other areas that need a little help along the way, you know, that aren't as fortunate as you
yes,
and I are.
Yes, certainly.
And they need help. And there's more and more today that are needing help than ever before, whether it's a family service center, working with the folks that they work with, or whether it's Rotary doing their thing, or, you know, there's any number of entities out there. Community Foundation of Texas.
Yes.
They do a fantastic job, and it benefits a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's critical to bring young people into that and let them grow along and and learn how to help others that are less fortunate than themselves.
How can a young professional, I mean, I think it takes maturity. It takes a level of professional development. It takes perhaps, you know, a certain age, because not everyone is different. And, you know, I genuinely believe that I became, you know, involved in the community, and that was just my objective because of my values. And I was always here alone. My family lives in Poland. So I had motivating factors that helped me really get involved in the community. How can we motivate these young people to do it? Because I don't think we have a great number of people that is really giving back and really supporting local nonprofits. How can we increase that number? Because to me, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what makes an impact. You can, you know, it's the money will always be there. You always have a job. But at the end of the day, to me, the most fulfilling thing that can be is if you create an impact in the community in which you live, work, and play by serving. So what could we do to really bring more people to that mindset, you know?
Well, that's an excellent question. I wish I had a good answer to it.
Well, I'm asking a man with 30 years of experience. So it's is it more conversation? Is it more, you know, instituting in more, I guess, you know, our professors? Is it our ISD that has to be more vocal about it, which I know they are already, but it has to start somewhere. And I think, you know, whether it's by us practitioners and we show by example why it's so important and we have to spread the message and be more vocal about it. But ultimately, again, this is why I think people should have, you know, it's more than us. It's more than it's more to life than just consuming. Right. And if you can truly instill that message into your kids, into your friends, into, you know, everybody around you, I feel like it makes it so much more a fulfilling experience, as opposed to just going to work and taking. And it's all about, yes, you have to make a living, of course, and be a provider to your family. But like you said, there's people less fortunate than us. You know, I've been to Africa. I've had a great fortune to travel the world. And people in Frisco have no idea what other people have to deal with. And it's mind-boggling to me, because our community has, I think, $130,000 median household income. Where I came from, that would be almost surreal money. Like you retire probably if this is what you make, because, you know, it's a completely different system, obviously, from an economical perspective.
Today, of course, I'm in my 80s.
Yes.
And it's a different world today from what I grew up in.
Yes.
And
very drastically.
And engineering, yeah. 5 years of engineering to get a degree, I never saw a computer.
Yeah.
I didn't know what a computer was.
Everything manual labor, right?
I had a slide rule.
Yeah.
My grandson just graduated from Arkansas 2 years ago with a mechanical engineering degree.
Fantastic.
All he saw was computers.
Yeah.
And whatever. And I showed him my slide rule the other day and said, "Do you know what this is?" He said, "No. What is it?"
Wow.
So that was your granddaddy's computer of the day. But I mean, today with all the technology and it's advancing so fast. And young people seem enamored with that and know how to use it, and people like me don't know how to use it. And really have no desire to learn it at this point. Yeah, but it's a different world today from what it was when I grew up.
I want to ask you a question pertaining, or some questions, several, pertaining your real estate career. Obviously, there's so many things that kids today can do pertaining to real estate and how they can get involved. If there was one of your grandkids that was just starting out, you know, let's say your grandson is not graduating from Arkansas with an engineering degree, but he has a business degree, or he's even an engineer, but he wants to get to real estate. What should he do or she do? What's the path?
Well, you've got a lot of classroom courses that you have to take, certain accreditations you have to do, and so you go to real estate school and take the courses, and then ultimately you have to get a broker to sponsor you that you would work with, take your salesman's license, and go through that. And it's, and after that, I think you have to serve so many years as a salesman before you have the opportunity to take a broker's test and become a broker.
How many years did it take for you to become a broker?
About two.
2 years.
But it was so easy back then. I got my broker's license in the 70s.
Yes.
And I never intended to be in real estate.
Yes.
I got a license because I wanted the knowledge that I would get from going to those real estate courses. If all I ever did was buy a home or sell a home, my own home.
Yes.
Then I'd have that knowledge, you know. And that's why I got it. And it was so easy to do. I got it while I was playing engineer. I'd cycle by a school in Dallas at night on my way home, take a course or two or three, whatever it was. And it was very inexpensive and it's very easy to do. So that's why I got my real estate salesman's license. And I never operated as a salesman. Back then, you get somebody to sponsor you, broker to sponsor you.
Yes.
And then after a year or some period of time, you qualified, you could go take a broker's test. And I did that and got my broker's license.
So as you got your license, what do you think were some of the most instrumental components of your success? Like how, you know, there's many aspiring brokers out there and people that really want to get in real estate and flip homes and do all those things and invest in apartments. Once you obtain your broker license, you know, I think what you've done then is it's also somewhat similar here, because ultimately it's a cliche saying, but it's about relationships and who you know. How can a young person get started? Because you have your broker license and you're like, okay, what do I do from here? What have you done?
Well, I didn't intend to get into real estate. But once I made the decision to leave LTV,
yes,
I thought, well, I've got to do something to eat.
Did you just
buy some beans?
Did you start to just, you know, develop relationships locally? How did you go about this to really get business?
I started locally, and I got a listing or two or three on some houses.
Yes.
And that didn't go well. And the reason it didn't go well, and I don't misunderstand my statement, I'm not sexist.
For sure.
But it became quite clear to me that showing houses and whatnot and competing with the female real estate agents, I was no match.
Yes. It's a little different. Yes.
I was totally no match.
Yes.
So I decided, hey, I better look in a different direction and look at farms and ranches because I know a little something about that, being raised on one. In fact, one broker in town asked me if I would come to work for them.
Yeah.
To handle the farm and ranch stuff. Because they said, we don't know anything about it. I said, I appreciate that, but I'm going to take a pass on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about the same time I started my other business, a business center out here.
Yes.
And that was totally by accident. I didn't mean to do that.
Why not?
I never thought about it.
So, but some components had to lead to you forming this business, right?
Well, yeah. A real estate broker friend of mine called me.
Here you go.
And said, hey, I've got a client that wants to rent one of those barns out there.
Yes.
That you have. And I said, get out of here. I've got my tractor parked in there. I'm not going to rent that. And I got to thinking the next week, that was pretty stupid.
Yeah.
So I called him back and I said, Bill, do you guys still want to rent that building out there? He said, yeah. And so we'll come out and let's talk about it. So he came out and we rented him this metal building. It's about, I don't know, 1,500 square foot building.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't bring in much money, but it brought in a little.
Yes.
And I think, I got another bigger building out here. Maybe I'll clean it out and see if I can rent it.
Yeah.
So I cleaned it out and rented it just like that. And then I really sat down and thought, well, I believe there's really something here. So I enclosed another pole barn that I had out there and made small spaces and rented each one of those things. And that's how that started. I didn't intend to do that.
Yeah.
You have to kind of look and see what opportunities come along, you know, that you haven't even thought about and pursue it.
Yes.
And after that, when I'd get a few dollars in my pocket, I'd build another building and rent it or build some mini storage spaces and rent those. My wife's telling me the whole time, you can't do that. You're not going to rent that. You don't have anybody that wants that. But anyway, I pressed on. And that's been really my major business since at least 1980. And real estate was going good then, too. But about 86, real estate fell off the cliff. That's when the S&Ls started failing. Banks had problems. A lot of the land was foreclosed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nobody selling anything. I mean, nothing.
So what did you do? I mean, everything just kind of
crashed. Real estate just died, but my rental business.
Your rental business.
Was still going.
Was still going. So you had a safety net almost.
So that was my safety net.
Yeah.
And it was a good safety net. And I did a little real estate after that.
Yeah.
After the market came back in 91, 92. But again, I was very fortunate in that. I ran into two clients.
Yes.
That were outstanding clients. And I worked with one of them for 39 years.
That's... Very rare, to say the least.
It's
Yes.
very rare.
Yeah. It's one thing to talk about employment at one organization, but having a client and ultimately business partnership for almost 40 years, I mean, that's a tremendous
And we're still
accomplishment.
best of friends today.
Yeah, hard to comprehend, really. I mean, that's obviously, I'm 31, 32, so you guys been friends and business partners for longer than I've been even on the earth.
And that happened by accident.
Yeah.
Most things in my career, except engineering, happened by accident or because of some situation that arose.
Yeah. Well, can I disagree? So
Sure.
I do believe that accident or a form of luck, I guess if we can call this, is needed. But I obviously I wasn't even on Earth back then, but I genuinely believe that nothing just happens for no reason. You did, I'm sure, some conscious efforts to at least put yourself in the position to be exposed to those people. And sometimes, yes, it happens and you're just meeting a person that changes your landscape of life. Yes. But if you don't have a certain mindset, how to go about it, I don't think you will even position yourself to have that luck in the first place.
I probably wouldn't totally agree with you
Yeah.
on that
Really? You
because
really believe it's purely
my
luck?
client of 39 years that I'm talking about,
Yes.
the way I met him, I was handling a neighbor's farm
Yes.
for sale. He was a doctor in Dallas and he had a real estate agent in Dallas.
Yes.
And so anyway, we got together and negotiated the sale of
Yes.
my neighbor's property. And it had a rent house on it. And I'd been managing that rent house, his old house.
Yes.
And it was just constant problem.
Yes.
This pipe's breaking, this is leaking, that needs fixing. And, I was tired of messing with that. So when we had the real estate closing, I made my speech because I knew my friend who had the client out of Dallas
Yes.
that she had a, after closing, that she had a an agreement with him for 2 years to, broker the land.
Yes.
So I made a speech and said, okay, the rent house is yours. I am through. I'm not crawling under that thing
Yeah,
anymore.
for sure.
And about 4 weeks later, my client shows up at my house. I mean, the guy
Oh,
that
wow.
the buyer,
Yes.
and he was Chinese. And I didn't see the car come in the driveway, but I was sitting in my easy chair in the den and looked out in the backyard. And here's four Chinese looking kids riding bicycles in my backyard. And I thought, what in the world is going on?
I know, right?
And I got out and looked, and he'd parked his station wagon the other side of the garage where I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
And then he had all the kids out, and they were from this high to that high.
So it caught you off guard ultimately, right?
Yeah. And he said, Sam, I've been thinking, said, My real estate agent said she lives in Dallas and she doesn't know anything about rent houses
Yeah.
and farms and like you to keep handling the house, the rental of the house.
Yes.
And I said, weren't you listening when I made my speech at closing? I'm through with that.
Yeah.
Oh, I said, you need to handle that. So I thinks, well, I'll handle it for a while and then maybe her listing will run out and I'll have a chance to, broker it for him. And that we've sort of formed a mutual admiration society, I guess.
Yes.
And that was our beginning.
Of 39 years in friendship and business partnership. It's something that, again, it's very hard to comprehend for me. I admire that very much so. But You said something at the beginning that stood out to me very much, and that it started with a phone call. It started with a phone call that really changed your landscape of your thought process. Because you were like, no, I don't want to rent it. I don't want to rent my property. My tractor needs to have a place.
Yeah.
And then...
But I realized pretty quick that was a pretty stupid assessment on my part.
So, but ultimately, you know, you took this call and it really, you self-reflected and you were able to form a career out of this. I mean, that's just, you know, I know that you have again, big sense of humility about yourself, but that's, you know, to do what you did, just a tremendous turnaround of your career where you were in engineering, left because you wanted to be in the life of your kids. And then you became this real estate pioneer really in Frisco, who, if you had to mention a few names, who was some of the contributors to your success? You know, we talk a lot about importance of having mentors and really learning early from people that have been there before. Who are some of the individuals that really helped you in your early in your real estate career and going forward as well?
Well, I was involved not directly but indirectly with Stonebriar Country Club.
Yes.
And it was owned by a friend of mine named John Jackson.
Yes.
It was called the Bowie Ranch, but everybody thought Bill Bowie owned it. Bill owned 10%. John Jackson owned 90%.
Yes.
And he was always, he was tough to deal with.
Yes.
But he and the mayor got along pretty good. And he foresaw a country club and a big golf, fancy golf course.
Yes.
And he brought me drawings of this. And he even had a name for it. And I don't remember what it was, but it had something to do with an area of San Francisco. And so he was pushing the sale of that land for somebody to develop a golf course. And as I say, I had no direct involvement, but it seemed like every time they ran into a problem, he was coming to me. Well, how do we do this or how do we do that?
Yeah.
You know, so I helped a little bit through that process. Didn't make a dime off of it, but had a lot of fun.
But you ultimately became a resource for John Jackson,
just
right?
Just a resource.
Just a resource, and you've done it on a volunteer basis, just like your community service for 30 years. I think that's something that is very important. This is almost as good of a piece of advice that Mr. Sam just mentioned, is ultimately opening yourself up to the community and being a resource for other people. When somebody makes a phone call or texts you, I would be so happy, because that's a humbling experience that somebody is reaching out to you and saying, hey, I need your help. And I think many people don't have that mentality. Again, their approach is a little different. Perhaps they're more to receive than to give. So you really establish yourself as a resource. And as a result, I mean, it sounds like helped you introduce to a lot of people, and everything else went from there like a domino.
Well, it certainly didn't hurt anything.
Yeah. So any other folks, you know, who was one of the people you admire from, you know, from the local, the Frisco, city of Frisco, you know, whether it's, you know, the former council or the former mayors or Frisco Economic Development Corporation.
Bob Warren would be number one.
Yes.
Bob was born here 21? Yeah, because he's about to be 97 or 98. And he's contributed his time and effort and talents to the city since the early 80s.
Yeah.
And excuse me, continues to do that.
Mm-hmm.
With right now with the Heritage Association. But he was so involved. But I'd say he'd be the number one in my book.
Mm-hmm. If there was one piece of advice that you would have, not only for me, but for this arising generation of millennials and people that are, you know, coming up here to Frisco, relocating from different cities, different countries, different communities, what do you think would be one piece, one good piece of advice that you could provide to those folks?
Get involved locally with the charities that really need some help. Get involved with, you know, you politically, locally. Mm-hmm. Stay attuned to what's going on in the community.
Yes.
And what the needs of the community are. And see how you could find a place to fit into that situation. And to the younger people, I would say lay your iPhone down and don't walk around with it reading it all the time, because yes, you're going to run into something.
Yes.
Or somebody's going to run into you. You know, this texting thing is just about out of
control.
Out of control.
Yeah.
And I see that every day. There's a lot of traffic in this community.
For sure.
And I have to stop at the traffic signal on Panther Creek Parkway to get on Preston.
Yes.
And at least once a day, and I don't like to honk at anybody.
Yeah.
But once a day, you'll have a car, one or two in front of it, that's just sitting there with the green light. And it's not a long green light.
Yeah.
And you know full well what they're doing.
They're on their phone.
They're on their phone.
Yes.
They're texting.
Yes.
And not paying attention.
You know, I completely agree with you. I'm very guilty of that myself sometimes. I spend a lot of time on my cell phone device. It's almost like it's better if I were to lose my wallet than my phone. Because wallet, yeah, I mean, your credit cards, you can just cancel them and they will send you new ones. With your phone, you're ultimately disconnected and people worry about your safety if you're okay. But one of the things that make me worried about the millennial generation is their ability to develop interpersonal skills with all the technology and ultimately mobile devices and distractions that are out there, because we have folks on social media, we have folks playing video games, esports is getting huge here in the community. But ultimately, I would say, to your point, put the iPhone down, but also one of my recent videos that I've posted says about listening to podcasts, listening to watching YouTube videos, reading books, really talking to people, educating yourself, self-learning, self-reflecting, and building your interpersonal skills. Because if you don't know how to communicate with another person, you will never advance in anything that you do. You may be the smartest person in the world, but if you don't know how to sell it and communicate it to your audience, nobody will take advantage of it.
That's correct.
So that's something that I can see also. I'm seeing that every day as I talk to students, talk to people in the community. It's employers are voicing their concerns, because you know there's kids that really come in and they are so smart and very driven and want to accomplish a great level of success, and they're willing to work hard, but they have a hard time with their communication skills because they spend so much time on their phone. Mm-hmm. And they feel more comfortable, obviously, conversating via text message and social media than, you know, face to face, which, you know, it's huge. I think this will never go away, no matter what you do.
No, it's going to get worse.
Yes.
In my opinion.
And it will get worse, but we cannot forget that the true, genuine relationship building always comes first. You can have distractions. You can have digital devices, your iPhones, your Apple Watches, whatever you have. However, if you don't pay attention to who is already around you and how much time you're dedicating to spend time with them, that will be the first mistake to really on the wrong path. And you know, it is unfortunate, but one of my hopes, you know, with this podcast is really to help people understand that. And you know, and maybe when they listen to it and they hear you say, hey, it's green light, don't be on your phone, maybe they will reflect and do something about it. You know, that's my genuine hope. So one book that you can recommend also for the benefit of younger generation, something that you can recommend that would be good for a good read.
I'm not a big reader myself.
You are not? Oh, interesting.
I read a few books, but I seldom ever read a fiction book.
Okay.
I'll read, you know, 90% of the books I read are nonfiction.
Nonfiction, okay. What about one of the most beneficial professional experiences that people can encounter or get exposed to for growth purposes? You've done so many things in your life with community involvement, obviously, that we've talked about, and, you know, seeking, being proactive, seeking a brokerage license. But what else could a young person do to get ahead of the competition?
Get back to learn a little something about history, because history is not being taught like it used to be.
Interesting. Why is that, you think?
Why
is not being taught the way it used to be? Is it what has changed?
I don't know whether it's they've added other courses and feel mm-hmm. like that's a lesser need.
Yes.
But as I understand it, there's not a whole lot of history taught anymore. And I'll give you, for instance, and this was a teacher that made this comment that I read about here a while mm-hmm. back. And she asked the question, well, what year did World War XI happen? She meant World War II.
World War II, yes.
But she read it as World War XI.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
It is sad. It is sad. You know, history, geography, you know, I think foreign languages, it's something that I genuinely have a level of appreciation and gratitude to my parents, because they pushed me. I started learning language in the fourth grade. But if they didn't push me to do it, I don't think I would be sitting here today, because you know, this world is becoming, I mean, we already are connected ultimately instantly with each other, but the more, you know, the more we know about each other from a historical perspective, geographical perspective, different ethnicities, cultures, countries, areas of the world. And if we can also, learn a language to communicate, Spanish or French, I mean, we're just within those two borders. Canada, obviously, they speak also French. And then you have Spanish from Mexico in the south. And it's very, a lot of people in Texas speak Spanish. So one of my goals, you know, and Ashley, we as build our family, is to have our kids be, you know, bilingual or trilingual, because that's the future. And that gives you an edge ultimately.
Well, I think bilingual is essential. And I never had I guess I had a Spanish course or two in grade school somewhere early on, but I don't remember any of it. I should, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sam. I really appreciate for your time. Thank you for coming on the show. And, you know, I just look forward to, you know, developing a relationship with you better and collaborating in the future. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, it's been quite an experience, because I think I asked you initially when you asked me to do this, I had to go look up what podcast was.
Yes.
I didn't know.
So what do you think now?
Well, it was an enjoyable experience. I just hope that it helped somebody along the way.
Absolutely.
Get a little something out of it.
Thank you for listening to The Tomas Show. Please subscribe and share.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to the conversation with Sam Roach. please, please, please subscribe and share with your friends, family, your colleagues. If you can leave me a review in iTunes, I would be very, very grateful. It gives me a lot of joy to produce these podcasts for you guys, and new episodes come out on every Monday. So if you want to be notified, definitely subscribe and you'll get a notification. Cheers.